far less able undergraduates, no graduates, graduate or professional students, no research funding from the federal government, industry, or foundations, no new intellectual property, no spinoff businesses, no ability to provide expert advice to government and commerce. Any organization must respect those who give life to the enterprise by including them in decision-making to which their expertise is truly relevant. For these very reasons, a university is distinctly unlike other forms of human organization. It cannot be a command structure like the military or government agency and preserve the flexibility needed to maximize individual attainment or to adapt to changing knowledge across the full range of knowledge. It is not like most for-profit businesses because it works not toward a single measure of profitability, but toward an optimized basket of social products. Baccalaureate graduates, master's and doctoral graduates, professional degree holders, research output, intellectual property, museum exhibitions, artistic performances, athletic entertainment, and on and on. Setting aside all of the products apart from degrees, the vast array of diverse educational attracts alone distinguishes a large public university from a profit-making business enterprise, which would be built on a much narrower range of competencies and products or services. A university is a distinct human activity, and shared governance is essential to its healthy, optimal operation. But the critics have a point too. Shared governance is sometimes allowed to become a caricature of itself, ever grinding, coming to no conclusions, serving only entrenched interests, disabling decision-making in areas outside faculty expertise. The trick is, of course, getting a sensible balance among the delegated authority of the faculty, the executive authority of presidents, chancellors, provosts, deans, department heads, and other officers, and fiduciary oversight by the trustees. Let me offer these eight principles as a guide. Underlying everything is a clear mutual understanding of the university's mission and social purpose. All parts of the university have a role in speaking to such matters, but the trustees manifest the institution legally on behalf of the public, and in the end, they have the responsibility to define the mission and social purpose. In the complex institutions of today, defining mission also means addressing the desired balance among the most important, prominent aspects of effort and output, including instruction at different levels, research, and outreach in various forms. The second essential is integrity throughout the governance structure. The board must operate with fiduciary integrity. Every appointed officer must be a person of integrity. All faculty-based processes must manifest integrity. If integrity is lacking, changes must be made. Third, every participant in the governance structure, trustees, appointed officers, and faculty leadership must be committed to act consistently in the institutional best interest. Fourth, the faculty should be granted operational authority in matters that are genuinely academic. They should also have advisory rights on other institutional matters such as budgeting and finance that bear on academic quality and integrity, even though they may not be in themselves academic. Fifth, depending on the pattern by which authority is delegated, the trustees, president, and chancellor should be satisfied that the mechanisms of faculty governance are appropriate in scope and sound both in design and in operation. Sixth, appointed officers should have clear responsibility and authority for most institutional policies and for daily operation. They should have the obligation to defer to the faculty in genuinely academic areas, but they must be willing